You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. It's the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jays. Raining Jays. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast, here podcasting for you in the dead of the dead period. Does that even make sense? Whatever. Screw it. I'm not stopping now. We're recording and we're going with it. I'm John Corrales of the Raining Jays. You can find my stuff at masslive.com. Joined today by a very special guest, Mr. James Holis, your favorite Twitter follow. Mr. James Holis, a.k.a. Snotty Drippin' on Twitter. You can find him on the Dunktales pod at writing on lineups. Going to put the pressure on you to be writing a little bit more regularly. So go to lineups.
Yeah.
How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I'm good. So, hey, everyone who's listening, basically translated, he's scraping the bottom of the barrel right now.
No, I'm not.
Yeah.
No, I'm not.
Come on.
Don't sell yourself short.
You know, I'm a listener. I listen in every show. And, you know, I know it's dog days of summer. I appreciate being on. But, you know, I know right now you probably could. It's hard to get people to come on. And I'm begging for it. I'm like, we'll podcast. For
No, absolutely. Absolutely not. No. You're not. Sam Packard is the bottom of the barrel. We employ him. Everything up from Sam is up.
Jam.
Yes. Yes. I should have come up with, like, nicknames for you. But
I mean, Temecula guy's close enough. That's all you need to know.
That's just it's never going to go away for you. It's
never going to
go away.
You know, the part about that probably still cheeses me off the most is that guys like Dan Levitard were like, this guy's a chump. He's a punk. I'm like, Levitard, what are you? I'd go upside your head, Levitard. What are you talking about?
He could meet you somewhere.
Wine country. We'd have a glass and we'd talk about it. Yeah.
But see, you're not the guy in all of that, in all of that bullshit. Like that's like really one of the classic Twitter moments. But like, you were just fucking with the guy. Like, it's not you. It's that dude actually went. He's the chump. He actually got so mad at some Twitter thing that he went to Temecula to find you. You were just fucking with that guy. You were in like Phoenix, weren't you?
Absolutely. I was in my mom's crib in Arizona, and I said it, like, if you follow my Twitter feed, right after I told him meet me, people were like, are you really going to go? I'm like, no, I'm in Arizona. So, like, I was tweeting exactly where I was right after that, and nobody, like, so that's what kind of got – it's all about perspective, right? Because, I mean, again, people like Levitard, oh, you don't tell you we're going to fight and then not show up to fight. That's being a punk, and I'm like –
come on.
Yeah, but yeah, and then like everyone, like people like you, we laugh about it because I'm like, what an idiot. You left your family on Christmas Day to go fight some stranger because of Kobe Bryant. Like, it doesn't make any sense. So, yeah.
That's like, yeah. Like, what is this? Like, the Old West? Like, this isn't like the 1940s where, like, you got to defend your honor. Somebody will walk up to you and slap you with a white glove and say, I demand satisfaction, sir. We must duel. Like, are you really supposed to go show up and fight somebody? Like that's
I think there has to be a certain age where like that's not what's done, right? I mean, I guess, you know, if you, whatever, I guess if something ever happens, you're out and about, you don't just turn tail and run, right? But like at the same time, you don't just set up fights after a certain age. So yeah, it was a strange time.
Yeah. Like that's like at some point, like even now, I don't know how I'm in my 40s. I'm like, I just turned 46. So I'm a little older than you, I think.
A little bit.
But like at some point in your, I don't know, 20s, maybe before that, you should really stop like fighting in general. Like that's the last thing I want to do. If I'm out and somebody just tries to punk me or whatever, I don't care. If I walk away, you can call me whatever you want. I don't give a shit. Like in the grand scheme of things in my life, what are my options? I'm going to get into a fight, which means I could either get hurt or I could very seriously hurt this other dude. And then get what? Maybe arrested, go to trial because I beat the shit out of this guy and beat him, you know, whatever. He fell, he hit his head. Or I can go on and live my life. And if that dude wants to call me whatever names he wants to call me with his friend, that doesn't impact me at all. Good, fine, call me whatever you want. I don't give a shit. I'm going to live my life, my happy life, and do my thing. Like, fighting at this point is like, if you try to mug me and I'm like defending my life, then I fight. Anything beyond that, it's like, it's fighting at this age is stupid.
Absolutely. So yeah, unless like I'm out and you actually rush me and like, attack me, then we're not gonna fight. Yeah. Words are just words or whatever. But yeah, so that was such a strain. And this was back almost 5 years ago, man. 5 or 6 years ago.
But that's with you forever. Like, that's just a thing. But again, classic Twitter moment. Like, I thought that was hilarious, and I didn't really know you back then. I thought it was hilarious because you're just like, yeah, man, come meet me, whatever. It was very obvious what was happening. I'm like, this other dude's going to actually go. And he showed up. I'm like, man, that's some high quality stuff. That was,
yeah. I was, yeah, he was sending pictures from his drive, and he's sending pictures of him flipping off the Temecula sign. And he's like, he was onto it. Yep. Yeah.
All right. Well, that was fun. That's going to be a thing that, you know, whatever, but we're going to move on.
All right. Yeah. Thanks for having me on. All right. Nice talking to you.
Yeah. That was a great podcast. Everybody subscribe wherever. No. You just came. We waited for you to finish at the gym. Your regular.
Appreciate
gym. You know, you. Let's talk about your workouts a little bit before we dive into the Celtics, because you're a very fit dude.
I've been working in the Ojale factory for the last couple
of
years.
Yes, you have. I want to make sure that because you were like, no, I can skip. I'm like, no. We're not important enough for you to skip. You've been out there. You've been getting at it.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm ex-military. I was always in good shape, and I played basketball, of course, and big basketball fan. I got out and I got a little lazy. And one day I kind of looked back in the mirror and I saw, like, you know, the classic Bigfoot, footage of him walking in the, you know, the grainy footage of him. That was me. I looked in the mirror and I saw like a big gelatinous kind of Bigfoot thing. And I'm like, nah, I got to get in the gym. So this is a couple years ago. So I go 5 times a week. I do like a full body every day. Thighs, tries, chest, shoulders, back, and then I do cardio, and I do the legs every other day, right? Do the squat rack and all that stuff. So I'm about 240 now, and you know, I can. It's San Diego, which is beach season almost year round. So you know, I don't wear a shirt anymore. So it's a good time.
That's good. You know, that's the goal, right? Go out there, be able to take your shirt off without people going, excuse me, sir. You cannot do that anymore.
Yes, there are children around, and.
Please.
Yeah.
People are trying to eat. I'm with you. That scene you described was me like probably a few months ago. The first year on the beat was very unforgiving, let's say. A lot of sitting, a lot of traveling, a lot of bad meals on the road. And then I looked at myself after the season was over and I was like, holy shit, dude. So I get what you're saying. I get where you're coming from. So, yeah, that's it's tough. It's tougher when you get older.
Absolutely. That metabolism slowed down. You got to work twice as hard to do like half as much as you used to do when you were younger. Yep.
So ex-military, I didn't know that about you. What branch? What were you doing?
I was Navy. I was a Navy guy for a while. Yep.
Wow. For how long?
I mean, over a decade, man. I lived in England. I lived in Japan. I've been to like maybe 30 countries. That, you know, what's funny. That's why sometimes we sit on Twitter and we talk to people and they talk to me like I'm not better than anybody else. Right. I mean, I started off in the nuclear engineering program.
Uh-huh.
I was a technician my whole time in the military. You know, I'm a technician now, my day job. So like when people talk to me and like, oh, well, don't be scared of numbers. I want to throttle them because I'm like, it's not about being scared of numbers. It's about sometimes basketball's more than numbers, you know? Right. Oh, you're just my test guy. I'm like, no, it's not that. It's just that you got so, you know, I've had a little more life experience than a lot of people. So when they talk to me and I'm like, no, you don't know what you're talking about. That's just not how the world is, you know? So.
No, I like that. Yeah. So let's go into that a little bit here because people, there's an article out, I forget where, is it Bleacher? Or what, whatever it was, comparing Steph Curry to Magic Johnson. And, you know, basically all you have nowadays is numbers. But if you this reaching back, and people do it with Larry Bird to bring it back to the Celtics thing. People do it with Larry Bird all the time. People are going to start doing it with Paul Pierce. You reach back and you pull the numbers, and it's so out of context. But the numbers don't understand context. It's hard to create a formula that accounts for, in the case of Magic versus Curry, well, the three-pointer was not valued back then almost at all. It was a last resort. You know, like, oh, you're settling for threes. Shooting 35% back then was like, what are you, insane? You got to move in. 43% shooting is better than 35% shooting. Nobody really bothered to do the math.
But, hey, shout out to Michael Adams, because he was one of the early three-point bombers in Denver. So shout out to him.
Sure. Shout out. Anytime you want to randomly throw a shout out in there, do it. Just whatever. just drop one in. But like basketball, like I can appreciate the numbers because they do shed some light, because the eye test is fraught with the possibility of, well, I like this guy, so my eyes are going to see something that, or they're going to ignore something because I like generally what he is. And so I like player X. He's got these flaws. I overlook these flaws. The numbers show you the flaws. It's indisputable with the numbers. But the numbers also don't show the situation. They don't show why the lineups are what they are. Like in the case of Gordon Hayward, they don't show the fact that he's coming back from injury. There's a lot of things that the numbers don't show.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely. Like, I hear people say stuff like Larry Bird would be Kyle Korver in today's NBA.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that kind of nonsense. Or like the article, shout out to my guy, I think Andrew Bailey. He wrote it. And it's, you know, and then some other people chimed in that I really respect and I follow and talk basketball with. And one person said Magic Johnson was overrated and, oh, there'd be, you know, what would he do today? There'd be no spacing around him. And it's just, it's remarkable that, I mean, this is the thing. I say this all the time. Basketball is just, it's not a math equation. As much as some people want it to be, it's not a math equation. There's things outside the human element, the chemistry element, the fear factor. Like, and I say fear factor because like a guy like LeBron James and Steph Curry, they incite panic in the defense in a way that you can't really, numbers don't really show it, but it matters on the basketball court, you know? So everything is context. And like you said, I mean, the three just wasn't that prevalent. If we drop Larry Bird in today's NBA and give him a summer of modern training, or two summers of modern training from his rookie season on, Larry Bird is going to be shooting 8 threes a game. He's probably shooting like, you know, mid 40s, you know, and that's just, he was such a great shooter. You can watch video of him shooting those long, you know, 22 footers right side of the 3-point line. And he's just draining them with hands in his face. And like, how do you not, you can't relate to that and say, oh, well, look at the numbers, show this. Cause that's not about numbers, right? You just know the guys can shoot. So that kind of thing. It's historically a lot of people who talk basketball these days, and this is not a whole, oh, back in my day thing, but like they've never seen these guys play. All they can look at is numbers and sees a couple grainy highlights and think, okay, I know how this guy plays. You don't know. It's hard to know. And things are just so different. So it's interesting when we compare eras. It's always interesting. Now, all that being said, I understand that Magic did it for so long at such a high level, and the finals appearances and the rings. Steph Curry, if you want to tell me Steph Curry is approaching that, because he's a point guard, right? And he's going to be a point guard even though he doesn't play and have the duty of a traditional point guard. The numbers, like, he changed the game so much. He has the rings. He has the MVPs. Like, it's his hardware and his resume won't be quite up to Magic Johnson's, but, I mean, he was such an offensive threat. Steph Curry is such an offensive threat that if he continues at this level for a few more years, and let's say they, you know, make another finals. I don't know, maybe win another finals. He's got to be in the conversation.
Sure. And this is why I just like to say guys like Bird and Magic and all of the all time greats, there's no use in trying to rank them. People always try to rank them. I get it. like LeBron is better than, you know, is LeBron better than Jordan? LeBron better than this guy? But just, they're all in the same room. There's one room where these guys go, and they're all there. And they all, when you're in that room, you could put that room in a house from any era, and it fits. It works. Those guys, Larry Bird can play in the 60s. He could play today. He could play 40 years from now. Same with Magic. Same with all those guys. Because and I think we've had this conversation before. You can't just take a Rick and Morty portal gun and say, okay, here's Larry Bird now, boom, and drop him in and say, go play basketball now. If Larry Bird was born in the year 2000, which hurts my feelings, by the way, that a guy born in the year 2000 would be coming into the league right now, but that's another story. In 2019, here's a rookie coming in. He's had all of today's modern conveniences. He's got a different upbringing. He's got a different focus. Of course, his mentality, you can say he's basically going to be the same person, assuming that his home life is all the same or whatever. But
I'll say this. I think he would understand, don't help my grandmother repave and regravel her driveway and ruin my back because I'm a multi-million dollar athlete. I can't do that. He would understand it.
That is true. We would hope so anyway. But like, that's the other thing. Like these guys, Larry Bird would be making $30 million a year now. I don't know that Larry Bird made $30 million in his career. I don't think he did. Like,
might not have.
In fact, while we're talking about it, I'm just going to go ahead to go to Basketball Reference and see.
You know what? You keep on riffing. I got this. I'm checking it out.
I'm already there. I'm already there. I'm scrolling on down to his, let's see, who gets there first? $22 million, $22.6 million over his career.
That's insane.
$22.6 million in his career. I mean.
His career numbers are probably like maybe the 30th highest paid player in the NBA today or something.
Oh my God. Like
one season. You know what I mean? That's crazy.
We did that the other day. Like there were like 40 some odd people making $20 million or more. Like $20 million now. D'Angelo Russell, what's he making?
Like maybe 22, and that's just like a deal. Maybe even 25. It's not bad for an all-star.
One year of D'Angelo Russell gets you as much money as Larry Bird's made his entire career. So like no doubt like Larry Bird in today's NBA would be like Supermax. So he'd be the same KD LeBron level money. So that changes everything, right? It just changes. He's not going to be out there mowing his lawn. I mean, he's going to still be a simple guy. We'll give him that same personality, but like, who knows how that even changes him? How does the money change him? How does the money change Magic? Magic was all Hollywood. What happens if you give him $30 million a year? He's driven as anybody, but how many of those guys that were hungry back then are not as hungry now or whatever? Like it's just, comparing the eras is very, very difficult.
Very difficult.
Let's take a break. We've been talking for a little bit. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about today's Celtics and we'll get into a discussion here about how we feel like the offseason's gone and all that stuff. Stick around. Come right back. Locked On Celtics.
Locked On Celtics.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
So this summer has been an interesting one.
Hey, John, real quick, I want to say that Larry would be right between Danilo Gallinari, who's 49th at $22.6 million, and he'd be right above Victor Oladipo at $21 million. So he'd be like the 50th highest paid player in the league. And that's his whole career. Okay, sorry, good.
That's if he made all. Yeah, times have changed. Times have changed. Jeez, that's mind-blowing shit.
Isn't it?
So give me your reaction to this summer.
I went through the seven stages of grief. So by March, I was tired of watching the team. I thought maybe I was being pessimistic, but then I heard our guy say it Maxwell say how this was like the most unlikable team he'd seen, you know, like ever. you know, for the Celtics. So, and it's funny. I try to watch, you know, every game when I could. I had league pass. So there was a lot of games I couldn't finish watching. I just couldn't finish watching. It was just such a joyless slog. And people told me, oh, well, we'll see. You're going to be fine. And then we heard the rumbles in, you know, January, February, and we saw Kyrie disengage, mm-hmm. you know? So I went through seven stages. I was ready for the playoffs to be over because I saw after game one and, you know, Milwaukee kind of got it together and Celtics fell apart and unraveled. It was embarrassing. It was. So we knew Kyrie was gone pretty early. That wasn't a shock. Al Horford shocked me. That was a bigger blow to me. I thought, you know, sure, Kyrie's the best player on the team, but Al might have been the most important player. And I've heard you guys discuss this before, right? Mm-hmm. Al just kind of, him and Marcus Smart kind of like the connective tissue that kind of held the team together on both sides of the ball. So that was a pretty big shock. The Philly, because I remember everyone was like, where's he going? Who made him this promise? And then boom, they dropped the bombshell that was Philly. That was a masterstroke by Philly. So, I went through the stages. I was pretty, not despondent, right? But after the expectations of last season, it was just such a big letdown. But after Summer League, watching Carson Edwards, the excitement of the Taco Fall experience, and just, you know, you got to recalibrate your expectations. The Kemba Walker signing was a very pleasant surprise. I like Kemba. He's not far off from Kyrie. Enes Kanter, he's going to do what he does, right? That's a big drop off. But I mean, again, you're trading off talent and you're hopefully finding that esprit de corps and finding that togetherness again in that locker room. So, again, expectations have been rejiggered, right? Because before it was championship or bust, where I think that's not the issue now. Now it's about finding a team that's cohesive, finding out, are we going to pay Jaylen Brown? Figuring out what to do with Jaylen Brown, right? As far as long term, seeing if Gordon Hayward could bounce back and kind of reclaim his confidence and his swagger and his position in the NBA as an actual like productive NBA player. So it's a lot of questions to be answered. But I think Kyrie leaving, honestly, a lot of stress is out the door. You can feel the tension just from watching that team. So I'm back on board. I was never off board, right? But I'm back kind of optimistic about the team.
It's funny. I could tell just from looking at my statistics, what people are reading. Cause we look at how many people are reading what stories, just trying to get a sense of what's popular and everything. And you can see right after the All-Star break, you can see the numbers start to dwindle a little bit. And you could tell that people are like, you know what? I'm kind of done. And it started to really fall apart to the point where we went out to Indy and nobody cared about the Indy series. And we were looking at those numbers like, wow, no one cares. No one cares. Things started to turn around as they started to pull off the sweep and people were like,
here we go.
They said to wait till the playoffs and maybe they were right. Like that was a kind of rejuvenation. But then the Milwaukee series happened. Everybody's like, oh shit, never mind. Once the season ended, boom, our numbers spiked. Every free agent rumor just off the charts. Like June and July, Tom and I were like the two most read people on all of Mass Live, from like going from nobody's reading our shit to like everybody's reading our shit. And that's just to say that Celtics fans, once the season was over, was like, okay, how do we clean up this mess? So it totally makes sense that you feel the way you feel. But now the question is, are you positive about this season because Kyrie's gone? Or are you just... do you think you're actually really positive about the season? Do you get what I'm saying? Like, is the fact that Kyrie's gone and all of that madness, Terry Rozier is gone, the fact that these guys seem like good guys, does that make you like overly positive about this season? Do you think you might be getting a little out of control, or do you feel like you get a good firm grasp on, okay, this is what this team is and I just kind of like it?
Well, I think because we don't know quite what the team is, Like it's like the, you know, the mystery box, you know, because anything can be in the box. So I don't have the, I think when you have the expectations that the Celtics came with last year, right? Championship or bust, kind of finals or bust. And then you fall so short. It's such a letdown that again, now that those expectations are gone, I am excited to see what Jason Tatum does in year three. I'm excited to see Jaylen Brown with a little more responsibility, hopefully. I'm excited to see Kemba Walker, you know, who was kind of basically like in the hinterlands of Charlotte. He's now on the big stage with talent around him. I'm excited to see how can he thrive in that environment, you know, playing. He's basically like a souped up Isaiah Thomas anyway. And now you have a system that can maybe maximize him. I'm excited to see Enes Kanter actually was not terrible defensively in the playoffs last year until Golden State, right? And that's Golden State. So, like, I'm excited to see if he can be a thriving part of a good team again, like he was in Portland. So, I'm excited to watch this team grow again and actually have fun playing basketball because it wasn't fun last year, right? Basketball is supposed to be entertainment and fun. There was no fun watching them lose like terrible losses to like the Hawks or struggling with the Hawks and struggling with the Cavs. That wasn't fun at all. You know, it just, whatever was missing was a drag on. It wasn't any joy watching that team. I think hopefully they can reclaim their joy. And it sounds silly, right? But even Golden State talks about this. A big part of what made Golden State play so great together for years was they play with a certain joy and passion. And that, you know, over the years might erode some. You can see that, you know, the season became a grind for Golden State and that kind of maybe impacts how they play. So I'm excited for this team to kind of reclaim having fun and being like, proud of being the Celtics and not bickering in the locker room and stuff. So that's my excitement. I don't expect the championship or even the finals, but the potential, I think we saw. They made the Eastern Conference finals a couple years ago. We'll see. I don't have like this, oh, sky's the limit, but I'm excited to see this team actually play together and have fun.
Yeah, I think that's where most Celtics fans have settled. You're like a Celtics fan, but like you're also like a very knowledgeable basketball guy. So you have that analytical side to you as well. You can see things that you have like your fandom, but you can also understand that certain things are in play here. It is interesting that the Celtics have compiled a team now of like seemingly genuinely good guys.
Yep.
They will swear up and down that they always kind of want good guys. And I will say, no one on last year's team was a bad guy.
Absolutely.
You know, like let me reset here because I think I'm falling into a trap that perpetuates a narrative that's not accurate. Like, okay, these are all good guys, and they seemingly pursued good guys, nice guys.
Right. Okay. So let me ask you a question. Real quick, did you see Marcus Smart on the jump today?
Yeah, I was going to save that for the next segment. But go ahead, ask your question.
Okay, so we'll save it. But no, you're good. I was going to say just his comments on Kyrie, so we'll talk about that next segment. We're fine.
Okay. This is what happens when I don't tell you what I'm thinking. I actually formulated that in the middle of this segment. I was like, let's save that like in my head for the next segment. So there's this whole thing about the Celtics pursued nice guys, and it was a reaction to last year. Last year's team didn't have bad guys on it.
Like, no.
Kyrie Irving might have pissed you off. Kyrie Irving might have reneged on a promise, if that's how you want to look at it. But he's not a bad guy. All he did was change his mind. And like, even if you believe the absolute worst in all of this, then okay, the worst thing that he did was he changed his mind and he, in the middle of the season, orchestrated his next professional move. Okay. Maybe you don't like the way he did it, and that's fair, but it's not like in this grand scheme of things, of all the bad people in this world, he's not a bad person. He just made a professional decision that you didn't like. That,
absolutely.
Okay, that's fine. So I want to make sure that I'm getting it right and that the narrative on this is not like those are bad people. Like Terry Rozier is not a bad dude. Like he's been like when he wasn't pissed off about his role. When he was enjoying himself, he was like fun and engaging, and he was a good quote. Like, he would talk to all of us. That's not a bad person. He was just pissed off. I don't think he handled it well. I think the ESPN ethering of the Celtics was bad, but that doesn't make him a bad person. So let me get your reaction to that. Like, do you think there's an unfair kind of narrative that's out there?
Yes, absolutely. And I'll say this. I have, in, you know, like I said, I went through seven stages, right? Because I was all on, I was dogpiling on Kyrie after the season. I was trying to be,
It's very easy.
You know what? He talked so much crap all season about wait till the playoffs. Wait, and then he had that series, but he wasn't good against the Bucks.
He set himself up for it. For sure.
Absolutely. So I did. I pinned a large part of blame on him. But, you know, look, like, again, looking back in this, the guy says, you know, the flat earth stuff, and he definitely is a, let's just say, unique thinker. So when you think about it, the way the season ended was very on brand for Kyrie. Like, he's a mercurial kind of guy. He wanted to be, I get it. I respect the fact he wanted to be the leader, but he hadn't taken the step to get there, and he got really frustrated, and you could see that. And, you know, hey, it didn't work out. So yes, a lot of, too much of the blame was put on Kyrie's plate. And then Terry Rozier, a lot of people now still, I see some people on Celtics Twitter, just they kill him. And I get it. He didn't handle it well. He wasn't part of the solution, which means you're part of the problem. But when you're a guy who was, the 16th pick, and he was, you know, kind of unheralded, and all of a sudden he's trying to make a name for himself, and he kind of proved he could be a kind of capable starter. You got to believe in yourself. And he believed himself to the point where he got frustrated. That's all it is. I like Terry Rozier still. I'm pulling for him. When he got that contract, I pumped my fist because I like Scary Terry. And sure, he's going to be playing for a bad team, putting up big numbers, hopefully, and he'll have some big games. I'm excited to see that for him. He just didn't work out for Boston as a backup. And it is what it is. So, yeah, I do, you know, there's a lot of talk about Grant Williams and Carson Edwards and how, you know, the people are playing up the whole good guy thing. And it's not fair because Kyrie's not a bad guy at all. You know, he's not a bad guy at all. He made a decision we don't like. And he let outside things maybe influence his play on the court. And it happens. So, yeah, I'm with you 100%.
So here we are. Celtics have a bunch of good guys. They're good guys. Okay, fine. I don't even know what my point is here. It's just a bunch of good guys. I think my point here is that the reason I asked you the other question was there is a reaction going on with Celtics fans that they're so relieved to get the negative elements. Even though they're not bad guys, there were negative elements as far as the team goes. Getting the negative elements out, like, it feels like we're starting this season with almost entirely or perhaps entirely positive elements on this team. And I feel like there's this expectation of we're back to Brad being able to get these guys to overachieve. Like you said, Kemba souped up Isaiah Thomas, which brings up the imagery of point guards thrive under Brad Stevens. And here's a guy that can go out there and capture some magic. Isaiah was a guy that captured the imagination of Boston Celtics fans. And of course, Kemba now has made a commitment to the Celtics for, well, 3 years plus a player option for the 4 year. But still, it's a commitment that we didn't have before. So there is like a certain optimism here. Like, even like Enes Kanter, we're seeing stories about him shooting threes. Like, everything is just positive, happy. I feel like this is like you have the divorce, and then this is like the first relationship after the divorce. And I can say that for experience.
You know what? It's not even the relationship. It's the first time that you wake up and you actually are like feeling like, oh, okay, I can breathe again.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So I'm with you with that. And it's like the Celtics really have turned the page. Now, real quick, I want to say something. I want to draw an analogy here. We kind of killed the Lakers last year for the whole trying to do the Anthony Davis trade. Mm-hmm. and how it kind of like, you know, it kind of shattered the young guys kind of, you know, their belief in themselves, and it kind of shattered that locker room in LA. Well, guess what? The Celtics did it all season. When all they hear is about Anthony Davis is the target, that was part of the, that was a big part of the problem. You know, that these guys are not on eggshells, but that's looming over you, that your front office is already looking at moving some of these young guys for Anthony Davis. You know, that was being talked about. And I think that's something maybe, I don't know if I heard you guys discuss that on the show, but that probably was definitely a contributing factor last season.
You know, I think that's a good point, and I don't think it's been discussed enough. I don't think it's been explored enough. My fear is that we've gotten to a point that people are like, I don't care about last year, and they just want to move on. But this is a point where Danny Ainge has gotten a lot of shit, and I see Lakers fans especially. But many other people talk about, well, the Celtics don't treat their players well because they go to the Isaiah Thomas trade.
Yep.
Okay. Which is okay. Fine. Isaiah got hurt. He hurt his hip for you guys. His sister got killed. He came out and played. And then you ship him out, which, okay, fair to some degree. But, like, it's not like they were shopping him around. They were prepared to go forward with him. But regardless, they get this rap for being almost too Patriots, almost too Belichick. And that in the NBA, it's different. Like, in the NFL, you can do that, right? Like, because non-guaranteed contracts, it's an ugly business in the NFL. That shit happens all the time. There's 70 men. I don't even know how many people are on the roster. There's like 100 people on the roster. So you do this stuff and it works in the NFL, but in the NBA, it doesn't work as well. And now you've got this. So I really do wonder how much those trade talks eroded what was happening in the locker room. When we talk about, like, we'll touch on Marcus Smart right now. Marcus said, in his, if you don't know what we're talking about, it's the, he was on The Jump. So if you're listening to the podcast, you didn't watch The Jump, Marcus Smart was on The Jump. And one of the things he said was, we were dysfunctional. Guys were trying to win, but like their own way, essentially. Things that we've been saying on the podcast. How much of that is because, like, Tatum and Rozier and Brown were all thinking, like, we might be part of this trade, so I don't feel the need to help you win. I just feel the need to go get my own, because in 3-4 months I'm not gonna be part of this team anyway, so I'm not gonna be fully invested.
Yeah, we've seen it. If you're not fully bought in, if a team, they all paid great lip service last season. But yeah, if a guy is not 100% bought in, like you said, the biggest thing, Kemba, the commitment, that makes such a difference. Having a guy who's a free agent and actually has options and has a foot kind of halfway out the door, that makes a huge difference. Having Terry Rozier, he knew he wasn't coming back, right? He knew, you know, all season, he's like, I'm not dealing with this again. So he'd come in the game and just kind of go for his. So, It even if they probably subconsciously, you know, they weren't making conscious effort to maybe submarine the team. But yeah, absolutely. If you're not 100% bought in and on the same page and on a string, it shows on the court, and we saw it.
So many factors here. It's so hard to really pin down. Like, human nature is we want one thing, right? You want to blame it on one thing because it's nice and tidy.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, like you said, you're a technician. It's very easy for you to be like, oh, here's your problem, right? Like,
oh, yep.
This thing, there's a banana in that engine. Take the banana out. Like, that's how obvious something has to be to me when it comes to the shit that you do. Like, if there's not a banana sticking out of something, then I don't know. But like, you look at a mechanical thing. It's not working. You know what it's supposed to look like. And you say, oh, this thing is your problem. And you fix it. Like, anybody that goes take a car in, my car doesn't want to start. Oh, it's your battery. It's this, whatever. It doesn't work like that with a team, especially last year. I think the layers are so complicated. Kyrie, like, okay, you can do a 30 for 30 just on Kyrie. Why? Why did he change his mind? Did he ever think? We talked about this on a podcast before. Was he ever committed to Boston? Like, these are all valid questions. But what you're bringing up and the whole Anthony Davis pursuit, that's a very valid element to last year's team. Like, if everything else was perfect and that happened, maybe they could have gotten past it. But
right.
Because it wasn't, like, you wonder how much of an impact that had. Look, you listen to Jackie McMullen, and she said that Kyrie lost faith in Danny Ainge. Why did he lose faith in Danny Ainge? Danny Ainge didn't make a move, right? So
yep.
3+2, Danny Ainge didn't make a move. Kyrie lost faith. Well, he wanted Danny Ainge to make a move. What move was he supposed to make? It's all, like, so intertwined. It's so hard to say, like, who was he supposed to move? Was he supposed to move Rozier? Like, he and Rozier, like, Kyrie and Rozier talked, both said, like, they had, like, almost adversarial relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, we can go on and on and on. The post-mortem on last year, if a lot of these people were coming back, it would be worth doing. And I
right.
still think there's some worth doing, but so many people, I just see anecdotally on Twitter, people are just like, I don't give a shit anymore. Just, we got Kemba now. Forget it. Kyrie's gone. I want to pretend it never happened. So let me ask you,
right.
is there value in doing a postmortem like this? Is there value in looking back anymore at stuff like this?
Absolutely. What's the saying? Those who do not know history are doomed to repeat it. So, like, you can't. Yeah, you can't just you can't just close that door and act like it didn't happen. You have to do. Hey, like, going back to the breakup analogy, right? You can't just say, "Oh, wow, we had a really bad breakup," and then stuff it down deep into your subconscious and say, "All right, I'm ready to move on." You got to, whatever pain you feel, you got to kind of, you got to inspect it. You got to figure out what happened. What part did you play in it? So. I think especially for Danny Ainge and for Coach Stevens, it's definitely important. And for, you know, for us too, as not just fans, as analysts and writers or bloggers, whatever, it's important for us to look at it too and try to figure out what happened exactly. Even if we won't get all the details, but like you said, at least put a yellow sticky on the different things. Okay. Kyrie and KD are friends. And that was a part of it. Spencer Dinwiddie admitted that he started talking to KD back in December. That's part of it. You know, bad losses, Jason Tatum playing selfish. That's part of it. Terry Rozier unhappy with his role in minutes. That's part of it. Jaylen Brown kind of rankled at being off the bench. That's part. So there's so many different moving parts. And, you know, could Danny Ainge have done something better? Sure. Hindsight 2020. You know, could he have found another home for Terry Rozier? And let Brad Wanamaker be the backup and, you know, get that part of the issues off the table. Sure. That would have been a good thing. Could Stevens have been more forceful, maybe more of a strong personality, which he's just not. Right. But could that have been part of it? Yes. Could Al Horford and Marcus Smart and Marcus Morris have done more to kind of, you know, be the vet leaderships in the locker room? Maybe, but we don't know what they were saying behind closed doors. So, but no matter what, it does. Even if so, you can have a contrast to next season. And even, hey, look, Jaylen Brown's still playing for a contract. He still needs a lot of, hopefully he's going to want a lot of minutes, a lot of more responsibility. Gordon Hayward could come back and be a better player this year and demand more of the ball. So that could still be an issue. There's still things that could be issues this season. But at the same time, I guess because it's new, we have things we don't know that we want to discover. So that's why it feels so fresh and like such a new beginning.
Yeah, one element here that we haven't discussed yet is that all of these things are valid, but also the NBA is a business. Like, everybody knows this, and the players know this. They should know this. And so there are elements that are going to happen to a player in the NBA that like, I've played, you've played, everybody here, like, no matter what level you've played at, if it isn't the NBA, there's an element to basketball you just don't understand. But also, like, you're supposed to understand it. Like, if I was in the NBA, I'd get a completely different lesson in basketball. And part of that is you're going to be in trade rumors. You're always going to be in trade rumors, especially if you're a young, good rookie. Like, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, we don't know how good they're going to be, and we can discuss the level of the promise that they've reached so far and whatever, but they're young, good rookies that are valuable, that other teams would love to have. And when you're good and young and you're on a team that's trying to win, there's a possibility that you're going to get moved for a win now guy. And your agent, the union, other veterans in the locker room, that's something that they need to impress upon everybody. And I'm sure that that message is relayed to them. So is in regards to the issue that you brought up with Danny Ainge, there's definitely something there to discuss. At the same time, it's up to the young guys, the guys who may be involved in those trade talks, to put it behind them and say, I got to just go out there and be the best basketball player that I can be. I got to still go out there and play good team basketball, because if you let these things affect you and impact your play, then a team that may want you isn't going to value you as highly. So your $20 million contract that you want, they're going to look at you and be like, yeah, but when these rumors hit, your play went down and we are signing you, but if we can't help it, if something else happens, and if there's any sort of, negative thing out there about you, is it going to impact your play? Like, we can't pay you $20 million if you're going to let negative stories about you impact your play. We'll give you 15. Like, and you're that's $5 million that you could lose, or whatever the number is. So there is an element here that, again, the Ainge stuff is valid. The Anthony Davis trade talks thing is very valid. With that has to come a separate or a counter discussion of players have to understand the business side of it. I think Tatum gets it because he talks about it a lot. You have to understand the business side of it, and you have to just get that. Look, this is my life. This is their lives. This is their jobs are to make a winning team. My job is to play great basketball. And at some point, I'm going to be 40 years old and done with this league, and I got to make sure I get the most out of it, and they got to make sure they get the most out of it, and we just got to all try to do that and work together while we're wherever, whatever situation is.
Yeah, and in a perfect world, it's easy to say that, right? It's easy to say, hey, you're being paid to play basketball, go play basketball. Don't let the outside noise distract you. And it's easy to say that, but they're human, right? And sure. They're 20, 21, 22. And let's be real. These NBA players, they have gigantic egos, right? And that's fine. You want your best players, your good players to have big egos because they want to, you know, believe in themselves and believe that they are among the best. And, you know, they're what, a handful of 400 NBA players in the world. They're in the upper echelon. So it's easy for us to want that for them. But, you know, how were you at 21 years old? You know,
oh God, how are you? Please.
Exactly. So, I mean, I know you know this, right? We're having the discussion, but like that's what makes the NBA so fascinating, right? Because sure. Jason Tatum, he says all the right things, but he sure as hell at times tried to hijack the offense last year in ways that just didn't help. And hopefully he looks back at the film of that and goes over with the coach and they kind of get him back on the right track. So, it's a fascinating, you know, like the NBA it's not a math equation. There's a human element. And it's all about trying to find that right mix of players and find that right mix of coach pushing and players pushing and players pulling and believing in themselves. And that's all you can hope for. So let's hope the team can put last season behind them and they could find a new mix, and they don't bring over, because there was a stinker on the team, like a kind of a cloud, right? So let's hope that Kyrie being gone and the pain of losing Al Horford, you know, can fade. And Kemba, I think Kemba's a strong leader. He's not Dame. Dame, I think, is probably the best leader in the NBA. But Kemba seems, you know, he's always been upbeat. He also has, he said the right things, and it seemed like he kept a positive attitude, even as the Hornets kind of just flailed around and treaded water. So it's going to be interesting to see. It's a definite chemistry experiment that's going to be interesting to see.
I agree. So let's take a break and come back and talk about Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart on the Jump. We touched on it a little bit. We'll get back to some more of that right after this on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Marcus Smart on the Jump. Fun little segment. Marcus is a cool guy. I could just say that just from personal experience. Marcus has always been very nice and accommodating. And it was fun to see him on the Jump. Talked about a bunch of different things, but you, James, you wanted to bring up his comments about Kyrie. What was it that struck you about his comments about Kyrie?
It struck me that, again, from the outside, we kind of try to, you know, we brought up the pitchforks for Kyrie. But to hear Marcus Smart, you know, he was right there in the thick of the things all season, to hear him basically defend Kyrie, you know, and he said that people were really laying it on Kyrie. And he goes, no matter what happened with Kyrie, he goes, Kyrie himself knows he didn't play up to his standards. But no matter what, there's four of the guys on the court with him. And we didn't do our part either. And he goes, hey, when things happened with my mom, he was the first one to call. When I was struggling on the court, he would be like, hey, man, he'd take me aside and just like talk to me. So to hear Marcus Smart, you know, what people are trying to say, oh, Kyrie damaged that locker room. To hear Marcus Smart, who's part of the locker room, basically say, no, he wasn't the only problem. Sure, he, you know, things happened, whatever, but he wasn't, we had issues. And like you said, going back to Jackie McMullen's piece where she said that after a bad loss, I think in somewhere in Florida, he went out to get shots up and everyone else just left. He told everybody, hey, let's go get, you know, I'm going to get shots up. And everyone else just left, you know, or hey, don't go out tonight. We got a game. And everyone else just kind of blew him off and went out anyway. So like, yeah, it's Kyrie. He's the big name, but things went bad last season. So yeah, to hear Marcus Smart basically go to bat for Kyrie, even after all that, you know, what we think happened, that kind of shifted my perspective a little bit.
Yeah. Marcus and Kyrie have had a pretty good relationship. Like Marcus is one of those guys that, like, despite what happened, like Kyrie and Marcus were always tight. Like Kyrie always was excited to play in the same backcourt as Marcus Smart. Like when Smart got into the starting lineup, Kyrie lit up. Like he knew, like he was excited about that. And I, in a story that I wrote, so I did a story on Marcus Smart, a big feature. It's my pinned tweet. If you guys were listening and you don't follow me on Twitter or you haven't checked it out, it's my pinned tweet. Marcus Smart, a couple of years ago was down in Miami with assistant coach Jay Larinaga, and they worked on his shot and they just worked on the repetition and all of that stuff. One of the elements in the story was a post-workout 5-on-5 where Kyrie, who was still at that point a member of the Cavaliers, this was right about the time he was requesting the trade, rolled up to Miami and said, I want to play, like, let's play. And it was, he wasn't going to play without Marcus Smart. And I'll just read directly from it. Like, he said that he told me that he told Coach Jay Larinaga, he's like, I'm a little tired. I'm probably not going to play today. And he said, okay. Then he literally calls me back and said, well, Kyrie just walked in and he said, he ain't playing till you get here. So I'm like, oh shit, I'll be up there in a little bit then. And then I talked to Marcus Smart's best friend, Trey Davis, about this. And he was like, this was the best I've ever seen Marcus Smart play. These two guys went at it. And their relationship goes back before Kyrie joined the Celtics. So there's a history of Kyrie and Marcus Smart together. And I definitely think that that plays into why there's a different relationship there. And just like anything, just like if a friend of mine that I've known for a few years, if somebody says, well, that guy's an asshole, I just met him and he's an asshole, you don't know if he's had a bad day, or maybe he's having a tough time in his life. Maybe he's just in a stretch where he's not handling things well. But I know this guy, and I know he's better than that. And so we've all been through this. We've all been through it. I'm certainly not innocent here. In my life, I've had stretches, long stretches, months long stretches, where I don't feel like I was myself. And I feel like that's not uncommon. And those are the times where you look to your friends, like your really close friends, you're like, you know what? I've been going through a tough time here. Thanks for sticking by me. Like, and I don't know exactly what's been going on with Kyrie, but like, whatever it is, you can sort of generally, broadly paint it with that broad brush. Like, that was a similar negative time in his life. And Marcus Smart is there saying, look, I know you, we're cool. And so he's spent multiple opportunities telling people, like, Kyrie's not that bad. And, like, all the negative stuff you're hearing, like, the Kyrie that I know, he's better than that. So, and they,
yep.
So I was not surprised to hear him say this stuff.
Yeah. And if Marcus Smart says it, I believe it. You know, he seems like, I don't have the same access you have at all, but, you know, I've been following him his whole career, and he's just one of those guys that seems like he just, it sounds so cliche, he just wants to win. And, once you get on his good side, like him and Kyrie are cool, like he'd run through a wall for Kyrie, you know? So that's it. So, yeah, it is what it is. And you know what? Like you said earlier, we want to find reasons. We want to say, this is what happened and this is why, or this is why, and then the second reason, and the third most important reason. There's just a lot of things that went into last season, left a bad taste. It's over. We're ready to turn the page. So, yeah. Smart on the jump was great. I'm a big fan of Marcus Smart, man. I was really high on him coming out of college. He didn't, you know, I even saw projections. They said, you know, physical profile, and this reminds you of Dwayne Wade and all that. So, yeah, he never became the player that, you know, when you draft somebody number five, was it five? Five or six, whatever. Him and Julius Randle, I think he was five. I think Randle was six. But either way, he never became, you know, that player, but he's such an integral part of what Boston does. He's such a unique player, such an amazing player. Like, that's the one of the reasons I'm still, you know, I'm optimistic about the Celtics is that Marcus Smart is still there. One of my things, I didn't want to see Marcus Smart traded, even for Anthony Davis. I didn't want to see Jaylen Brown traded, even though that was Jaylen, you know, whatever. But I love the young guys they have there. So, I'm a big Smart fan.
It's hard not to be a Smart fan. It really is, especially this past season. Like, he's got, if you're holding off because he couldn't hit the jumper, and now he's hitting jump shots. But Marcus Smart is genuinely, like, positive person. Like, I think that he's, what you see is what you get with him. Like, he's not going to, he's just not going to bullshit you. Like, if he doesn't like something, he might be able to say a couple things creatively, but like, I don't think he's going to bullshit you. And that's, I value that quality in a person. And
quick aside, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
I'll remember where you are. I'm holding play. You are no names or anything. Is there someone maybe in the media that you've noticed that Marcus Smart maybe doesn't quite like? And how did he show that person, or what made you say that?
I don't think there's anybody that he obviously doesn't like.
All right.
I mean, I can think of, I don't know. It's hard because in a scrum setting, it's hard for you to pick out like I know of a couple of people that, how am I going to put this? I know of a couple of people that would kind of fit what you're fishing for. You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
But in a scrum setting, he's generally pretty cordial. He just answers, even if it's a bullshit question, he rolls with it. Like he'd never pull
a Russell Westbrook, is what you're telling me.
Right. Right.
Gotcha.
He won't. Kyrie has. If you go back and you look at some of his scrums, and I don't know if anybody would, but you can find some of the spots where he's just like, what? And like, he's done that a couple of times. Smart.
Yeah.
Like the really, truly professional guys, as far as players, they'll take a question that's just a, like, we all know it. Like, I'm not shy about this. There's some questions that are just bad questions, and they're cliche questions, very often geared towards getting a certain response. Very often in the television world, where they're aimed at getting 15-second quotes that can easily fill a section on a TV broadcast. So
right.
That's, you know, we all know what those questions are. There are questions that can be asked in the media in a scrum that are, you know, you're trying to get some other, maybe you just, a lot of times when I ask questions, I'm trying to get something. I'm trying to get a response. You don't know what the answer is going to be. I'm trying to ask a question that I'm not trying to write about the particular question that I'm asking, unless the answer is great. But maybe that leads to something else. I don't know. Like, I don't like cliche questions.
Right.
But back to your point, your question. I think the stuff that any reporter that he may not like, I think it would show up. It would show up more on a one-on-one basis, where
gotcha.
He doesn't give very good answers or thoughtful answers. He just gives stock answers.
Gotcha.
And from my experience, like when I talked to Marcus Smart, when he was talking about Jay Larinaga or Kyrie or all that stuff, like he gives thoughtful answers, like meaning, like he really thinks about it, like it means something to him. So that's the best answer I can give you.
Well, then no, that's a great answer, because I mean, that's, so you know, we know he's a maniac on the court, but off the court he's a, you know, level-headed,
yeah,
professional. There you go.
Yeah. Okay, couple more Marcus Smart things before we wrap things up. What did you think about his flopping answer?
You know what? The fact that he owned it and he said, I deserved everything I got from – they showed the everyone who hadn't seen it, they showed the clip of Kyle – what's the guy's name? Korver. Korver, like, bumped him in the playoffs a few years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
He went flying. Like, he flopped like a fish. He did. And he goes, yeah. He goes, hey, man. He goes, look, I'll say this, though. You know, and it's true. He goes, everything's geared towards the offense now. He said, your favorite player flops on offense. I'm flopping on defense. And so he's like, you really can't, you know. I got his body. He's like, he said, I'm the youngest of five boys. So I had to get my way somehow. And that's where I learned it. So he, to hear him really own it and really just say, hey, I did it. And I, you know, I'm a little gamesmanship. That meant a lot to me. I love Marcus Smart, man.
How can you not? I tweeted that quote out and people just loved it. Like, that's, you can kind of tell what people latch onto. Like, sometimes I'll tweet a quote out and no one gives a shit. But that tweet about, I flop on defense, your favorite player flops on offense. Like,
yes.
People loved that quote. They loved that quote. And, that's like Marcus Smart in a nutshell. Like, yeah, okay, yeah, I do this, but I'm doing it in order to defend. I'm doing it in order to get a call. I'm trying to stop the other team by any means necessary versus going out there and just trying to score a few extra points by doing this stuff, which, you know, I mean, look, James Harden is like the prime suspect. Getting to the line 20 times a game, that helps your team win too. But Marcus Smart in his head, he's like, yeah, I flop on defense because I'm trying to stop you motherfuckers. Like, that's different to me. Like, that's okay. So
he's a true American hero.
That's it. and the last thing on Smart, since you said American hero, Team USA. Marcus Smart is excited to be on Team USA. Now, I don't agree with him by saying, like, yeah, the guys who go out there and get in the world championships should have priority to be on the Olympic team. Like, we get that each Team USA is trying to be the best Team USA it can be, but it's fun to watch him, like, really honestly be excited about representing the United States on the basketball court.
After last season, I felt the Celtics was kind of snake bitten. And so it kind of scares me to have so many Celtics involved this year.
Does it? Really?
Not scares me, but like, look, I want our guys to be, I want the Celtics to be healthy and rested and ready to roll next season. And we know they play in the summer anyway, right? And they're going to have fun. And so it's fine. Honestly, and knock on wood, ever since the Paul George injury, man, when guys say they're backing out of the Olympics or FIBA, I 100% understand. Because all it takes is one – and Gordon Hayward, all his injury. All it takes is one freak injury, somebody turns their head at the wrong time, and things can go badly. I know it's a terrible way to think, right? These guys don't play scared. I should, as a fan, shouldn't be worried either. But, I mean, I want them to play. And obviously Marcus Smart's going to be great. I love that he gets to be out there. I love that Kemba's going to be out there. Or did Kemba back out too?
Kemba's in.
Oh, yeah, Kemba. Who else? Isn't Jalen and Tatum a part of the select teams too? Are they doing it too?
It's not even the select. Right now it's Smart, Tatum, Kemba, and Jalen all invited to the camp. That's so like in a week.
Yeah. So like it's awesome. And we do know that like it's really a thing. The FIBA bump, right? Even if the superstars are going to be there, it like helps your confidence and you play in the high level against other guys. And like you kind of hit the ground running in the season when other people might kind of be in a slog. So it's cool. I'm excited to see these guys. But yeah, ever since the Paul George injury, man, That was so horrific. I remember I watched it live. You know, and ever since then, whenever guys are going like, God, my favorite guys, like, oh my God, just don't get hurt. You know, so.
Yeah.
But no, it's going to be awesome, man. It is awesome that, cause you know, hey, Marcus Smart has a cult following. To have him be on the big stage and Jalen on the big stage and Jason Tatum on the big stage. And you know, it's also a bonding thing too, right? We don't know what happened last season. Team USA, the FIBA stuff is always good vibes and good times. And so hopefully these guys get together and just build something that they can build off towards next season too.
Yeah, I like it for that. I like it for the opportunity for those four guys. Like the more Celtics that can be in this thing together, I think that's a good thing for them. And look, you play for Pop. You play against competition that's better than whatever competition that you're going to be playing against over the summer. Like, there'll be plenty of times for them to rest. Like, it's not like this is going to horribly tax them by playing a month overseas. Like, I get that the time zones and blah, 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 but they'll be back. They'll be fine. I like the opportunity for these guys to kind of get together and bond a little bit and take a little bit of chemistry into camp with them. So I'm excited.
Did you see the one-on-one video they posted with Jason Tatum and Chris Paul and one more?
Yeah. With Drew Hanlon.
Oh my God. I know it's, you know what? And this is like, hey, summer workout videos are summer workout videos. I get it. I want Jason Tatum. I'm excited to see him bounce back, and people are down on him, you know, after the season that, and that's the way things went in Boston. he went from, in a lot of eyes, from this, you know, promising young possible superstar to, is Jason Tatum overrated? His first year was a fluke.
Right.
He thinks he's Kobe. So I'm excited to see him bounce back and have a strong season this year and kind of reclaim his promise.
People are just not patient at all. And maybe it's because of social media that we see less patience, and maybe in the past, again, me being an old guy in the past, there were plenty of people who were impatient and I just didn't pay attention to it. But like, everybody wants immediate gratification, instant gratification. Are you a Simpsons fan?
I am.
Okay. You know the episode where Mo opens up his restaurant, Uncle Mo's Family Feed Bag?
I do.
And he orders the deep fryer from the Navy, as a matter of fact. And he says, oh, it can flash fry a buffalo in 40 seconds. And Homer says, 40 seconds, but I want it now. Like, that's my go-to clip when people get impatient with, like, a second-year player. Like, it's been 40 seconds of his career. Like, 2 years of an NBA career, that's like 40 seconds worth. Like, you want him to be an NBA megastar now. Well, like, only two or three people have ever done that. He can still be a very, very good player without making that leap. But we just talked about, we spent an hour talking about all of these things that were wrong with this team. Like, situation matters. So I'm looking forward to this season just so we can figure out who is Jason Tatum, who is Jaylen Brown. I've said all along, this season is primarily about figuring out exactly how good those guys can be. Is Jason Tatum as good as we think he can be, as Jason Tatum believers? Is Jaylen Brown, as Jaylen Brown believers, going to be as good as we think he can be? Or were we wrong? Is he not going to be quite as good? This is the year to figure that stuff out. So I'm excited, and I think that month plus of FIBA basketball is going to be a great way to get them into the flow. And so I'm looking forward to not only seeing them play, but seeing the results of how they played carry over into Boston.
Absolutely. Yep. I mean, like, we've seen the FIBA bump, and hopefully both these guys, all these guys come back and just, like, you know, hey, I don't have, as a fan, I have high expectations. Hey, this team made the Eastern Conference Finals a couple years ago. But being realistic, you know, there's Philly and there's Milwaukee, and probably, you know, a step below, at least a step below the Celtics. But we'll see. But yeah, I mean, hey, they could possibly come out the gates and look like world beaters, right? And that'll be fun to watch. We'd love to see it. Kemba could come out and start torching. Kemba is there's such a wide range of how this season could turn out, with a lot of it being positive, that, yeah, we're excited, man. Everyone should be excited.
You should be excited. People should be excited about having had this hour plus of us talking, which I probably should split into two podcasts with how much we've been talking, but I don't feel like editing that down. So this is going to be one long podcast.
Oh, yeah.
People can just listen to it. Listen to it in two pieces and whatever. Man, thank you very much for hopping on. This has been fun. We talked a little bit about it in the break. Go ahead.
It's always a pleasure, man. And like I said, I'm a longtime listener, big fan of you guys. Even crazy Jam Packard. So, like, to see my name in Spotify when I open it up, to see my name, I can search, you know, James Holes or Snotty Drip in Spotify, and I come up on the feed. To me, it tickles me, man. So, keep putting out great product, and you guys keep doing what you're doing. You got like a forever fan here, buddy.
Well, look, I'm a fan of YouTube. Like, that's like, thank you. We've talked a little bit about this in the break. But, like, I'm just happy to just have this conversation. I'm on vacation this week. Like, this is my vacation week, and I'm still podcasting because what else am I going to do? Like, oh, I'm going to take a vacation from talking basketball. Let me go and do what I love to do and talk basketball with cool people. Like, that's
– you got to give the people what they want. right? You guys have set the bar. It's almost like if you're a cartel and you got people hooked. You got to give them a little bit to keep them on the hook, you know, give them a little, hey, you can cut it a little bit with some cheesy stuff like me on the air, but guess what? You're still giving them the good product and they're going to keep coming back. So got to give them a little something.
This podcast was for me. I'm glad the people are going to enjoy it, but this podcast was for me. And we really should be having like you on more. We get caught up during the regular season just talking about what's going on. We definitely need to do more guests. So it doesn't seem like this is things slow down. We're like, we should talk to other people. So we're not just talking to each other. So again, very excited to have you on. It's always a fun conversation. Like this was supposed to be half an hour and we've been talking for like an hour and a half. So it just goes to show that we always have fun having you on and having this conversation. So again, follow James at Snotty Drippin. You got to know who Snotty Drippin is by now. So
I'm honored, brother. Thanks, man. It's been a lot of fun. I appreciate you.
All right, man. So everybody subscribe. If you're a new listener, if you're one of Snotty's followers that hasn't really listened to the podcast, check us out. Subscribe wherever you can find your podcast. It's on Spotify. It's on Stitcher, Google, Apple, Himalaya. It's all those places. All of you regular listeners, this is a 5-star podcast. Snotty's a 5-star guest. So give us that 5-star rating wherever you can. A good written review and share the podcast. Tell everybody, listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked On Celtics.
Millies. Here on the Locked On Podcast Network.
See, you've got a much better voice than I do. Maybe we could just contract you out to do some of that voice stuff for us.
Oh yeah, Locked On.
Yeah, see, we got to, but I'd have to change all of the interstitial music to like R&B slow jam stuff because that's like the Quiet Storm voice.
This is awesome.